What a difference between the situation in which the disciples found themselves and verse 6 of Revelation 4. And in front of the throne, there is something like a sea of glass, like crystal. I don't know about you, but I find it hard imagining what the kingdom of God is going to be like when God has brought in the new heaven and new earth and made his home with us. When Jesus was trying to teach people about the kingdom of God, he always said, it is like. We do that, don't we, when we know that what we're trying to explain is outside the experience of the other person. So you can't describe it exactly as it is because they would have no concept of that. So we always have to say, it is like. The revelation of the future kingdom that John received is, to be honest, beyond my comprehension. I get sort of flashes and small pictures, but my mind just cannot conceptualize it all. I hope I'm not the only one in that, am I? But it sounds really special, and it will be incredible. I'm not quite sure what it's going to look like, but I'm also not sure how it's going to work properly, to be honest, as well, because lions lying down with lambs, and where's the food going to come from? And we won't go down all the bodily processes after that, but how is everything going to work in a place where there is no corruption? Anyway, we'll leave that to God. I'm sure he's got that perfectly. It will all just work out perfectly. But what I do know is that as I read through Revelation and the other scriptures, it's going to be amazing. Because we will be totally in the presence of God there, and everything will be made right, as it should be. One of the things that really struck me from this reading today was a sea of glass. Like crystal. Having lived beside the sea for most of my life, I must admit to a fascination with large expanses of water. As a child, I spent a good proportion of my holidays and weekends out on the water, and my grandparents' house was right on the beach in Sulcombe. And when we visited, before we moved down to Sulcombe, we'd be lulled to sleep by the lapping of the waves on the shore. At meal times, we'd all try to sit round that side of the table because you looked out on the water, and there's something about the sea sparkling on water and the sailboats going past, and oh, it was just so special. They had really good views to the other two sides as well, but there was just something about watching the sea. I don't think other nations quite understand, though, why we have all these chairs just facing out and looking out to sea. I don't think they quite understand the British fascination with watching the sea. But in all its moods, it is magnificent, isn't it? And a sea as flat as a millstone, crystal clear, and with the sun glinting on it, has to be one of the most beautiful sights. Within me, it promotes feelings of calm and peace. And I believe that that gives us an inkling of the description in Revelation. But that isn't the sort of sea in which the disciples found themselves. So let's step into that boat with them. Close your eyes if it helps. Can you imagine the sun sparkling on the water as you set out from the shore? How do you feel to be setting sail back across the lake? Pleased to be going to the other side? Or is there an encounter you'd rather defer? Are you happy to be back on the boats, which have been an intrinsic part of your life since childhood? Or are you anxious? Because boats are not a place you feel comfortable. Are you glad to be leaving behind those who keep following Jesus around and taking so much of his time and energy? Or do you find pleasure in being seen as a close follower of this amazing man and wish you could have stayed longer? As you move further out onto the water, the fickle nature of the wind, which so often in the evening whistles down the gullies between the hills that surrounds the water, causes the water to stir. Feel your stomach pitch and toss as the wind suddenly rises even more and a black storm sweeps down from the hills. The waves are rising and the water is collecting in the bottom of the boat. It's up to your ankles now. At Simon's direction, you help furl the sail. Feel the anxiety rising, then the panic. Will the boat hold? Will it be capsized? Will you have to swim for it? You're fighting for your life. This is the worst storm you have ever experienced. Notice that Jesus sleeps on in the aft of the boat. Do you feel envious at his lack of anxiety? Or angry? Isn't it his fault that you are out here now in this storm? Hear your voice shouting over the wind, "Master, Master, we are perishing." Watch Jesus shake the sleep from his eyes and raise his hand. Listen as he rebukes the wind and waves. Feel the wind drop as suddenly as it arose. Feel your fears subside and your heart return to its normal beat. How do you feel as Jesus says, "Where is your faith?" Where is your faith when things go wrong? Is it easier to trust in God when things are calm, life is going smoothly, all is sunny? Do you panic when life seems in turmoil, when things happen outside of your control, things that affect you and your future? In our modern society, we are taught to have insurance to help us weather difficulties. In our modern society, medical dramas give the impression that usually all will be well. Illness and death are sanitized. In our modern society, it's easy to believe that we are in control. Yet most of us will experience some measure of sickness, grief, hardship. Do we face reality, prepare for eventualities, have the resilience to face down what comes? Or do we expect a fair weather voyage through life and are surprised when things go wrong? Do we expect God to protect us from storms, or do we expect God to bring us through them with courage and faith? Is the lesson of this passage that the turmoil and storms are part of human existence and that we have no need to panic in the face of them? For Christ is in the storm with us, and he expects us to use our skills to sail a way through, and if necessary, gives us new courage and strength to endure until normality returns. Is it easier to face the storm when you've been through rough seas before? Why was it that Jesus did not instantly help them when they started panicking? Was he really asleep? Could you sleep in the middle of that? Was it right that he left them to fend for themselves? In the first chapter of James, we're told to consider it pure joy whenever you face trials of many kinds. The testing of your faith develops perseverance. Perseverance must finish its work, so that you may be mature and complete. Was Jesus really sleeping all that time, or did he give them the opportunity to draw on their experience and expertise? Did he expect them to draw upon their reserves of faith? Was he giving them the opportunity to persevere and gain maturity? When the storm clouds roll in, do you expect to be rescued or helped straight away? Or do you work with others, drawing upon experience and expertise, whilst praying calmly in faith and trusting God? Jesus responded, brought calm to the winds, calm to the waves, calm to the disciples. He acted when called upon and did not leave them comfortless. Storms are a part of life and part of nature. Your reaction to them and in them will show how you relate to God, to others, and to yourself in a crisis. What fascinates me is that it's well known that in the evening, storms may well arise in that part, because as I said, the wind funnels down the ravines around in the hills around the lake. Storms are not uncommon. So why is this recorded? Why was it remembered and written about in three of the Gospels? Was it because the disciples and the early church saw it as a key step in their understanding of who Jesus might be? The way that Jesus handled the storm showed the trust that he had in his Creator God, in his Father. Did the disciples also remember the story as teaching them an important lesson about faith? Because they needed faith as they travelled around to spread the gospel, encountering new experiences. They needed faith when they had to learn with the storms of persecution. And they became steadfast in both the journeying, the newness, and the storms of persecution. How do you react in the storms of life? This week we've heard much of Shemima Begum. People have become heated in voicing their views. Some have reacted with hatred, with fear. Where do you think Jesus is in this storm? What would his reaction be in her situation and the others' situation of those like her? We're also hearing of antagonism within those who voted differently on Brexit. The closer we get, it seems that the stronger some feelings are becoming. In that storm, where would Jesus be? What does he expect of us? We will go through both storms and times of calm in our journey through this life. But let us always keep our eyes fixed on the author and perfecter of our faith. And remember that eventually all will be well, for God will make his home with us in the new heaven and the new earth. We will be totally in his presence, and all will be right and perfect.